Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Lindsay Hicks joins us from Houston, Texas, to share the miraculous story of watching God revive her four-month-old son. She talks about the abiding presence of God through the darkest moments, growing in patience and grace in the grieving process, and allowing gratitude to push against the bitterness and cynicism that threatens to harden our hearts. She lives in the tension between having seen God work in mighty ways and the reality that her son's life is forever altered. Let's dive in. Well, today I am thrilled to have on the show Lindsay Hicks with us. Lindsay, it's a privilege to have you on the podcast today. Well, I actually remember hearing about you, Lindsay, long before we first connected. One of the women in our Bible study shared a prayer request about a child who had been in an accident and was fighting for his life. So would you just take us back to October of 2021 when Walker was just a couple of months old?
Yes. So we are coming up on the year anniversary, October 27th of 2021, when I got a phone call from work and that Walker had fallen and they weren't sure if he was okay from daycare. And so I called my husband and we both were just like, you know, it might just be, you know, just them being extra precautious. It hopefully is okay. There's no, you know, what we're hearing was no signs of injury. And so I just try to keep myself calm. And so I drove to pick him up. And when I saw him, he was just kind of limp. I grabbed him and he just seemed very tired, very out of it, very lethargic and coming in and out. And I couldn't tell if it was because typically after daycare, he was really tired and needed a nap. And so, you know, and with babies, there's so much of guessing of what's going on since they can't tell you.
Right.
And so, you know, and then we called the, we called 911 and, we had an ambulance come to be safe. So I took him to the couch and just laid him flat. And there was moms around me. And I just asked if we could all pray together. And at that point I'm feeling pretty calm, just trying to like not stir up the fear. And it's not hitting me yet. They come in and immediately take him out on a stretcher. And that's when I just lost it. Cause I just, that was just a realization moment that, you know, it's just really scary and he's not in my arms and, think something could be really wrong.
And he's only about 4 months old at this point. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. He is about 4 months old at that time. So they take him out and to do all the tests on him and we're just waiting and I'm just sitting outside on the lawn, sobbing and scared. And so then they come out and they tell us, we got to get a life flight. We are seeing signs of a brain bleed, according to all of the symptoms that I had just described and that they had seen. So we're like, oh my gosh, this is serious. So, and the life flight came pretty quick, but it felt like forever. So then we chased the helicopter into Houston, to downtown Houston. He was being life flighted to Memorial Hermann. And, you know, we're just in shock. This is surreal. We weren't really talking. And, we get a phone call. So, you know, traffic is bad. And, in any city really, but especially Houston at that time of day. It was around 5 o'clock at that point. are closer to getting closer to six, but, and before we got there, the doctors had called and said, we have Walker and we're doing tests and we need your permission for these tests, as well as the surgery, that we were about to take him into, which they're saying a lot of things that we don't understand, but we said, whatever you need to do, please, please do it. And we finally get there and his name is under an alias name. So it took a minute to find him. Or figure out, you know, the connection, because they received him so fast and, they put him under alias before they get more information on the child or any patient, I guess, who's not verbal at the moment. And so, we go in and we just see our little boy on this big stretcher in this room with teams of doctors and nurses and all kinds of people around the room. And there, we were asked if we wanted to see him one more time before going back. And we said, absolutely. But we couldn't touch him because, any child under two, it's considered automatically, an investigation. And so we were considered, suspects at that time. And, so that was kind of gut wrenching. And then they started explaining, some of the doctors outside started explaining things to us about what the possibilities of what could go wrong and what it really looks like. And it just got way too graphic for me and difficult to hear. So I had to walk away while one of the doctors was talking to Cole. And so then there was a chaplain and child life specialist that showed up, and we kind of knew, like, oh, this isn't a good thing. Mm-hmm. And just meaning that clearly this is a dire circumstance. And I just see my son start to get rolled off, and just my little baby boy. And I just saw this little strength in him, though, that I just held on to. So we are then walked up to the PICU waiting room, the pediatric ICU, where Walker would be then taken to at post-surgery. So we're waiting in there for a while, and, you know, no one's really allowed. It was still COVID procedure protocol. Mm-hmm. So no one besides parents are allowed in. But Cole's dad is, he is a minister. And so we were able to get him in as our chaplain. Mm-hmm. And so that was a blessing that he was able to come be with us. But we're just praying, we're numb, we're sitting in shock and just waiting for results. And it was around 6:37 maybe that he went around in surgery, and it had been a few hours and we hadn't heard anything. So we asked for more information, and they didn't come out until around 10 to let us know that things weren't looking good. That they were trying really hard to get him stable. And before the surgery, things were looking okay, that he again had woken up and was lively at some points, and things were looking okay. And then I think it was the scans that indicated, okay, we need to go in. And so essentially with this surgery, it's a craniotomy. Could have said that wrong, probably did, but basically it's they remove the skull to allow for fluids and blood to drain out, as well as for the brain to continue to swell, because it's going to. But if you allow for the room for it to swell, it's not going to get cut off in circulation as much, so it just provides that extra space for it to happen, since it's going to happen no matter what. And so when they went in, things were just looking really bad. And his doctor, he came on for our last podcast, and he explained a lot of it in scientific terms as well as layman's terms to really break it down and indicate, like, this was a dead patient. This was essentially, they're going to do everything in their power to revive him. But statistically, he was not going to make it. Like, was just so far gone. And with how much damage was done to the brain and how much bleeding there was. So they were taking turns doing compressions on him during surgery, and they're pumping his air and because he wasn't even strong enough to be put on a ventilator. And there was a lot that went on, and he coded several times. He had several strokes. And so that's when I think when they came to give us that news is when things were, because I was feeling hopeful before that. But I think I really just got hit with, things kept just hitting me. And because I mean, I've never heard of this before, of how things go with a brain injury. And I just, it's a whole nother world. So anyways, then we're just waiting longer and just things get scarier. And they finally come to get us around midnight or a little after 11, I guess. And they asked to take us to what's called the Tranquility Room. And, which I instantly, we didn't want to go back there, because I knew that that meant if they're taking us from the waiting room to another room to talk to us, I could just tell that it wasn't going to be good news. And so they took their time to, gently let us know that he was not going to make it. They did everything in their power, and they finally got him up to the PICU, just stable enough to get him hooked up to everything and give him meds and all that. And they said, you know, in the medical world, you can keep on working on a patient, but what is too far? You know, so it's the question of, does it help or does it hurt the patient? And at that point, it was decided that any more work would hurt him and cause further damage or prolong the pain and damage. And so we were told once they get him a little bit more stable, he was still losing blood. And once they get him more stable, that we could come say goodbye to him. And so, you know, we're just in complete shock, and we call our parents to come up and say goodbye. They had to come in. Well, they didn't come in, yet, but I'm getting ahead of myself, but we finally got the chance to go back there, and we barely even see any bit of our son because there's so many tubes and wires and wraps and just covered, and his head wrap has blood all over it, and they're still pumping for him because he still cannot breathe with a ventilator because still has much fluid in his lungs and all of that. And so we get a moment with them, and then our parents come in one at a time, and we are just so emotionally exhausted at that point. But they told us they weren't going to take him off the vent off. So they're able to finally put him on a ventilator, and they couldn't take him off of it until X amount of hours after sedating him, because legally they have to give a patient a chance if they were to extubate them for them to potentially, if there was a fight to be had, for them to breathe on their own. So we had till 4 a.m. So we had hours. It was after midnight at that point. We had a few hours left with him, and I just didn't know what else to do. And I just prayed over him. I worshiped over him and did what I could, but I just felt so weak myself, and so did Cole. And we were just holding each other, but also just like, you know, feeling like life stopped in its tracks, and like, what is it life going to look like after this? And so then a few hours pass, and then, we get to around 3 o'clock, and we're talking with our nurse, and we're talking about how there was some color coming back into him, and he was finally able, you know, stable enough to rest. And they started noticing his numbers looking better. and things are starting to kind of show a little bit of a spark of life in him and of a little bit of hope. And so we talked with the doctor and his nurse, who we've actually gotten to see a few times after everything. She's wonderful. He had many angel nurses, and we're so thankful for just who God lined up for Walker's care. And so she talked with the doctor and said, this is not the same baby that came in. This is not the same patient. He's more stable. He has color in him. He's breathing with a vent. I think he has a chance. And we made the decision to not take him off and give him some more time. And so from there, and we started to see a little bit of a hand twitch, and just these little miraculous things that just started to happen that were just in shock over. And we started to see some life come back into our little son. And then followed that was the doctors giving us all some more difficult truths of, okay, you know, this is looking good. I'm cautiously optimistic is what one of his doctors said. And, but they still were warning us. Now, the next few days could include some really hard decisions, and we didn't know exactly what that meant, but, they definitely prepared us for this, that, and the other. And just because he was still in the acute phase, the next 24 to 72 hours, the most critical phases of the brain swelling, and as well as everything else kind of getting back in order with his body. And he's like got so many things. He had like 20 different things hooked up to him. And so slowly they start being able to, the next few hours to then days, you know, we're sleepless and just staying in that room and sleeping on the floor when we can, and then talking to the doctors. And they start being able to take him off things and adjust things. And then one eye opens, and we see his beautiful little eye. And then I think it was the next day, the next eye opened, he starts wiggling his body a little bit, and we're just seeing his life come back into him. And just, I mean, just the miracle after miracle. I mean, they were all shocked just coming in, how and what bad shape he was in internally, and how things were going so far south to coming out of this. I mean, the fact that he was even alive was a miracle. It is a miracle. And the doctors will say it. And, but the other thing is the fact that he isn't a vegetable is also, just ridiculously crazy. Like, they were expecting that. And so the more we started seeing of him was just shocking. And
so you guys really, in those first couple of days and hours, even, it sounds like, you know, you guys really just watched as God revived your son, brought him back to life, and, you know, renewed your hope that your son was gonna continue living, where you had, you know, just a couple of days before been told that you needed to say goodbye to him. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about how you saw God's hand in the midst of such incredibly hard, traumatic circumstances of those first few days and weeks immediately following the accident.
So with any trauma, people are going to react differently. And I think sometimes we just don't even know how we're going to react, you know? And, for me, it's just, I freeze up, and I knew my only source of help and of strength was the Lord. He was the only one that could get us through, no matter what the answer is. And we knew ultimately our son Walker being in the Lord's hands was the best, the absolute best possible solution there was of any kind. And when we had first had to say goodbye. You know, we could have said, no, we need to fight for more. But in that moment, Cole and I both, and this is where I think this could be taken wrong by people, but Cole and I both knew that ultimately him being in the Lord's hands was the best option. And so we just handed him to the Lord open-handedly, as hard as that was, and just said, Lord, he's yours. We love you. And we're begging for help here, but, you know, we know there's a plan that's beyond our plans and our little life. And so God just really, gave us just a reassurance of his presence consistently.
We'll be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Chip and Trina Rayburn at Premier Pools and Spas. What started as a small operation in Fayette County has grown, and today they serve much of Central Texas. They are wonderful people who run their business with integrity. We encourage you to consider Premier Pools and Spas if you are in the market for a backyard upgrade.
And now back to the show.
You and Cole have been married about 5 years, but I just can't imagine the impact that this would have on your marriage. And, you know, for you and Cole, what has this been like to wrestle through this as a fairly newly married couple with your first child and, you know, walk through nearly losing a child and then your reality shifting overnight?
Mm-hmm. That was definitely a huge adjustment for both of us. And it was interesting because, like I said before, everyone faces trauma differently. And Cole, it was like we flipped roles. I became the one that was like, we just got to put our foot one foot at a time in front of ourselves. I don't have the strength and the energy to get emotional right now. I just need to focus on doing what's best for my baby and whatever's right, like tunnel vision, whatever's right in front of me. And for Cole, he flipped it to, he was the one that was very openly emotional and dealing with everything right there, you know, when it happened. And, so I think it was a hard, but a beautiful balance. Cause there'd be times where I was like, Cole, get it together. Like I need you to be strong right now. And then there was times where he was like, Lindsay, I need you to communicate. I need you to talk to with me right now. Like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Like, I feel your distance. I'm like, no, I'm just focused on our baby. And, but I knew that also wasn't a healthy place to stay. And I was also envious of the fact that he could feel. And so I had to really work through that. I had to really be prayerful about it. I had to be open with him about it. And it just took us being patient with each other. And, I mean, we definitely had hard moments. Out of one of Walker's surgeries, the doctor came out and said 60% of parents don't make it out of situations like this or of having a kid with special needs. And like, so they end up in divorce. And I mean, that could definitely make sense. If you're solely only focused on your child, then you're hurting your marriage. And that needs to be the stronghold of the family and what is the anchor and the, well, not the anchor, the Lord's our anchor, but just really we needed to be, in order to be strong for Walker, we had to be strong together. And right. So that meant me having more emotional conversations than I felt were realistic at the time.
Like I can't, almost in some ways, probably feeling like I don't even have the bandwidth to engage like you want me to right now.
Right. And I even at one point texted his friends, like, I cannot be there for Cole right now in the way he needs me to be. So I need y'all to be there for him in this moment. Mm-hmm. I know I'll have to, you know, fill in, but right now I can't, cause I was still, and we went straight to rehab after the hospital. And so I spent every day, you know, up there with Walker, and he had a crazy schedule of therapies, and Cole would come up after work and then he would have to drive home, and they were long days. And so we were just very split at that time. And we for majority of our relationship did distance. And I think in a sense that prepared us for this. It was 7 years of, we got married at 7 years-ish, 6 years, I guess, of of distance relationship. And so I think it just, you know, in times when those, that was tough, I'm like, okay, God, you prepared us for this with that. So I think there was just unique challenges that the Lord really did prepare us for and equipped us for. And did I suck as a wife sometimes? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to biblical counseling, seeing that, okay, I need some help here. I don't want to sit in bitterness or anger, resentment of any kind. Like, that's not going to be healthy for any of us. And I need to deal with this grief. And so she really helped me work through some of those things to where I could love more openly.
Hmm. I think one of the things that I heard you say that is such a great piece of wisdom for me, and regardless of where people are in their own relationships, but even just patience with the grief process of the other person.
Yes.
You know, that both of your grief processes have looked different, and mm-hmm. probably they're still grieving that you guys will continue mm-hmm. to process through. And even just to have that perspective of, I want to give you grace in how I extend patience to you and where you're mm-hmm. at in that process, if I'm in a different place. Mm-hmm. Well, Lindsay, I know one thing that you also mentioned, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, is just that you live in this tension between the reality that God has worked miraculously in Walker's life without question, right? And yet your son's mm-hmm. life has been forever altered. Mm-hmm. How do you push away from the tendency to allow your heart to become bitter and mm-hmm. cynical and kind of go down the what if road? What if this mm-hmm. hadn't happened? What if this had been different?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we definitely had to battle that for a while, and as expected. And there will be times throughout our life where that question will still come up. What if he actually had his full ability? So, to kind of back up, in rehab, he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, which is a weakness in his muscles. There's a disconnect between the brain and those muscles to be able to contract and retract and just be able to properly control the limbs. And so he was diagnosed a quadriplegic, which means all four limbs are affected. And when they gave me that news, I was like, okay, what does that mean? Like, can you explain that to me? And at first, you know, I honestly wasn't hurt by that news, simply because I was still full of such gratitude of where he was at, and also knowing like a label is a label, but it doesn't mean that completely hinders him or means what his future will look like. But as I started to process, it hit harder, and realizing, oh, okay, this is for life. He has special needs, and he's going to have a lot of needs that we're going to have to work through. And that can mean living a very unnormal life. So the harsh reality definitely sunk in. And, you know, the comparison issue is so hard for any parent. And then when you add in special needs, I think can amplify. And it was hard for me to, at first coming home with Walker, to hear people, you know, get worked up or worried over small little, to me at the time, because I didn't have the capacity, I think, to empathize with others. I was just so overwhelmed. To me, what seemed, you know, like minute issues, I was like, well, at least that's the worst of your issues, you know? And so I would just catch myself feeling that and thinking that a lot. And I just knew it was just not healthy, but I also had to give myself grace that I was still grieving and I was still getting through. But I just also, it kept hitting me that I was like, if I'm going to be a good friend, I have to meet people where they're at. Even these little things would still, you know, that they're dealing with would still bother me now too. Like, they're, you know, seeing your baby sick of any kind, or, you know, sad about anything, you know, it's just, or, you know, people dealing with any kind of issues, doesn't have to be a parent situation, but I can't just see myself, my situation as the worst and how everyone else needs to suck it up. But I think that was my problem, is because I felt like I was sucking it up and doing my best to hold it together, that everyone else also had to around me.
Right.
And so again, that's why part of the reason why I went to counseling, because I knew I needed some tools and assistance and prayer and biblical guidance. And how do I get through this? How the in the way that is just, that's right. And that's, you know, I'm just, because I'm going through something does not give me an excuse to not pursue, my walk with Christ. And in fact, you know, I'm hurting myself more if I'm not. And so, I think there's a lot more grace with that, obviously, like just with being in a hard place. But in Proverbs, it talks about how deceitful our hearts are and how to not lean on our own understanding. And I knew how deceitful my heart was being. And I had to pray for compassion. I had to pray for empathy. I had to pray for me to forgive and, move out of my just headspace of, you know, I have it the worst. There's the very first thing we approached in counseling was a verse in, I believe, Ephesians, about how, whatever you have experienced is not new to the world. Hmm. And I was like, but yes, it is, but no, it's not. You know, people have experienced, you know, similar or worse situations. And so I have to get over my pride. That was, biggest factor is my pride. Using my pride as,
almost like as an excuse to kind of leverage your own hardness of heart, or allow for your own heart to become hardened and bitter. Absolutely. And cynical.
Absolutely. So I had to pray for a lot of humility, and still continue to have to, because that's, you know, that's one of my huge flaws. And, but I'm so thankful that the Lord, you know, honors that, and that He cares so deeply about our hearts and our growth and our relationship with Him, that He knows anything that is apart from Him is no good. And so He will pluck those icky fruits from our hearts. And, so I'm just thankful for His guidance in that. I could not get over my bitterness, my sadness, my, self-righteousness without Him.
Our tagline through this podcast is "Real People, Hard Questions." And one of the things I was so struck by when you first shared your story with me, Lindsay, was your humble heart that just talks about God with such genuine joy and affection. How has your view of God been challenged, or maybe even shifted, in all that you've walked through in the last year of your life?
I think that there's been scripture that has become more alive to me, where the Lord has proved Himself over and over. But there's also parts where, sure, I question, man, I feel pretty alone. I feel so alone in this. Why my son? Why did he have to go through this for, say, me to learn lessons, or for other people to be brought to, you know, closer to the Lord or see His works? And so, you know, and two, just the numbness of, just realizing how broken this world is, and just sometimes not having the energy for it. And sure, that, you know, that the Lord has allowed that, and that's sometimes hard pill to swallow. And, but again, you know, and everyone's journey is so different with grief and trauma and growth. And, but there's just been scripture that has been so powerful to me throughout my life, that has just been all the more reassured and amplified, that, you know, dear brothers and sisters, you know, consider it pure joy when you go through trials in life, because, you know, it creates perseverance, and it grows us, and or it can if we allow it to,
right?
And that we can do it in Christ's name and glorify Him through it, and it gives us a platform to testify of His goodness. And it seems so upside down and so, you know, against what makes sense. It's like, but what are you talking about? God's goodness and these, you know, when you're dealing with such a horrific situation. And that's kind of the whole point, is that it goes against, our worldviews, but God proves Himself to be so much greater. And so I think I'm just humbled and in awe of His truth and just the truth that has been proclaimed and has been proven. And so a verse that was really big for me for a long time was about how in our weakness we are strong, and how He is our strength, and how He provides all that we need. And how, you know, when we see that, when we lean on Him, we can boast of our weakness all the more because of how great it shows He is and all that He can do through our trials. And so, I mean, and I don't want to say all these things like, oh my gosh, I am not holier than that, but I'm trying to just really show, oh my gosh, what God can do if we just open-handedly let Him lead our lives. Because I mean, looking back at all that we went through, it is a miracle that I can be here today and have healing in my heart, joy in my heart, peace. And it's all because of Him. And so, you know, there was dark moments, hard moments, and there again will still be, but overall I can have joy. And I don't have to be hard on myself for my weaknesses because of who He is and who I am in Him.
Hmm. Wow, Lindsay, that's so powerful. I just, you know, want to just encourage listeners to honestly just to pause the recording and just to praise God for what has happened in y'all's lives, what He has done in Walker's life, but also just to lift up your whole family, to pray for you and Cole, and to pray for Walker's ongoing growth and his healing, and for God's work to continue to be made manifest in his life. I was just thinking about in the Gospels when the disciples come to a man who's born blind, you know, and they say, what happened? Did his parents sin? You know, did what went wrong? You know, and Christ's response to them is no, that he is here today, that the works of God may be manifest in his life. Mm-hmm. And wow, what an incredible honor that I've seen, you know, just, and even that you guys have this attitude of God, we still don't know why. We may never know why you allowed this to happen in Walker's life. And there are hard parts of that you'll probably always wrestle through. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, what a tremendous honor for the works of God to be made manifest in his life. Mm-hmm. And so we just, as people listen, I pray that they would encourage your family through prayer and just lift you guys up. But I just wanted to end by just, you know, asking you to just share some of the places, whether it's books, people, or activities, that God has brought the most healing and comfort to you in this last year.
And I appreciate you asking that, because I think sometimes when we get in a hard place, you know, and sometimes we expect God to do all the work, but we also do have to do our part. And as hard as it is, and even if we have little energy. So, some resources that for me that have just been very beneficial this whole past year, you know, been some things that are not, you know, feasible for some people, but like, for example, I was blessed with essentially going to yoga for free. And I had really bad back problems after sleeping on the bench in the hospital after 2 months. And I couldn't breathe well. I think I'm sure anxiety. And being able to, so you can, you know, do that at home too. And I do that at home as well now. But just being able to take that time to meditate and breathe and stretch my body was huge. I was taking back some of, you know, my time just to heal my physical body, because it was broken after being stuck inside for so long and living a sedentary lifestyle when I was so used to being so active. And, you know, just getting outside. There's a friend who, well, she is now a friend, and we actually got introduced through one of our Walker's Mutual and her son's mutual nurse. And so they're going through something very similar right now. And it's such a blessing that I get to walk with her through this. And one of the things I just, you know, told her too, is that something huge for us is just doing something enjoyable for like me and Walker every day, and getting outside and just doing some normal things, some lighthearted things. So just finding that balance in life and not feeling like I have to 24/7. Cause in the beginning I felt like I had to 24/7 be working on therapy. I felt so guilty. So guilty. And then I just realized that wasn't realistic. And I took up projects at home. Some people don't care for that, but for me, landscaping was huge, redoing our garage. Some people it's crafting. Maybe it's, I don't know, you know, everyone's got a different niche, but that was for me a fuel, a creative fuel. I'm also, I started reading a book called Gentle and Lowly, which I shared with you, and you had also read.
Book. Yes.
Oh, it's so good. And you know, I was given a lot of amazing books of, people's testimonials of how they healed through trauma from this, that, or the other. And those are also amazing resources. What I really loved about this book is that it talks about the heart of Jesus, who he really is and how much he loves us. And it just really breaks it down. It makes you resonate on it. And it just makes you really sit in it. And for me, that was huge, because I needed that to really understand who my savior is, who my friend is. That's my closest friend, and who's walking me through this dark season, and how he has grace for me when I don't have it for myself. And so that was a beautiful resource. And then biblical counseling was just incredible, because it walked us, it was a cool way of really getting to see the ties of what scripture says about our brokenness and our sin, and how we can walk forward pursuing a righteous life daily. And so I was nervous about counseling at first, because I was like, I don't want to go to where I'm just sobbing about my issues. You know, I want to actually grow from this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just sit in the and wallow and dwell in the hard places. I want tools and just support and encouragement in my growth. And that's what I received from it. So I was super thankful for that. And I really encourage others to pursue that if they need it. And two, community of just, you know, even whenever, like I said, we are living a different lifestyle than most people now, but we're not alone. And so I had to push myself to just continue calling up friends, texting friends, getting with them. They were really good about doing that with me, but you know, there's times where it's hard for me to do the same, and going on walks with people. And now I joined a mom's group called MOPS, and that's a nationwide thing, but it's not everywhere. And so, you know, I just encourage people who are longing for that community, because so many people are, but just don't know where to start. And, you know, honestly, sometimes it just starts with just thinking about who is around you, and just being prayerful about who is placed in your life. It is purposeful. Mm-hmm. And God can do something with that relationship, even if it just starts with one. And sometimes, you know, relationships are messy, but they are so worth it. We're meant for this fellowship. We cannot do life alone. And, you know, sometimes people don't get your circumstances, but I think if we have grace for their misunderstanding, and also knowing we're going to screw up, we can do it all the better.
Mm. Lindsay, this is so good and has been just so rich. And, I know that this is still, a lot of this is still fresh for you guys and you're still walking through this. And again, we just are so grateful that you would be open to just sharing your story. And so, yeah, I look forward to getting to meet Walker and, blessings over your family. Thanks again for just engaging on such a deep level and just pouring out your heart and your journey over the last year. So it's been a huge honor to have you.
If you'd like to know more about this ministry, check out our website at wovenministry.com or download the Woven app to engage on a deeper level. Please take the time to rate and review this podcast. It helps listeners find this feed. But better yet, share Wits End with a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, and production is by Tim Scarborough. We are so thrilled you tuned in today.